following Evangelism Coach presentation is given by your host, Chris Walker, speaker, church consultant, international evangelism trainer, and principal writer at evangelismcoach.org.
Hey, welcome to the Evangelism Coach podcast, and I'm Chris Walker, host of evangelismcoach.org, and welcome to today's podcast, where we'll be looking at issues related to congregational evangelism, personal evangelism, and hospitality. And today, we're going to go ahead and focus on one particular overlooked piece of church marketing, and that is the press release, and particularly how to use the press release to give your church some free marketing. And so today I've got a guest on board with me, Richard Hong. He's the pastor of First Presbyterian Church up in Englewood, New Jersey. Now, Richard and I met in March of 2010 when I was up in the Newark area giving a conference on hospitality and evangelism. And one afternoon, we were going to lunch, and we had a chat in his car about some of the marketing that their church does via press releases, and I wanted to capture some of that conversation here today. And so a lot of our churches want to know how to add some effective marketing to their outreach campaigns, and press releases are one of those ways that you can garner free publicity for your church. And this is more than just those little program announcements that some churches will make in their Saturday paper and the religion notes about some speaker who's coming. But regular press releases can call attention to your church and increase your church's visibility and reputation there in the community, which may help attract people to your church who want to participate in those programs and hopefully grow in their walk with Christ. So over the last few years, I've been occasionally asked about press releases for churches, and I've seen some really awful ones, and I've seen some really good ones, and so I've asked Richard to share what their church is doing, how they do it, and some of the lessons that they've learned using press releases as one aspect of their marketing strategies. And so first off, Rich, I'd love to welcome you to our time today. And so go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself and about your church.
Well, Chris, it's certainly glad to be chatting with you today. And first of all, my church is located just about 5 miles as the crow flies outside of New York City. So we're in New Jersey. It is a fairly densely populated area. It's an area that is very, very diverse in every way imaginable. The church that I'm serving is a medium-sized church, 370 members, 150, 200 in worship. The church at one point was in its history, and we're talking way, way back, was one of the premier churches serving this community, which had been the very first Wall Street bedroom community. And this was before Wall Street really was Wall Street. But over the years, things changed dramatically. The area is now extremely diverse, as I mentioned. And so as we're diversifying our congregation, we're trying to do our best to reach out to people and let them know that we aren't the church they'd read about. So one of the things that we've had to do is also create a new image for ourselves, because the church today is not this church that had been a legacy of a century before.
And so part of the work that press releases are helping you do is to help recreate that the public image or the perception, at least, in those who read the articles. Now, how long has your church been doing press releases, and what kind of results are you seeing?
We've been doing them for a few years now, and we're definitely seeing results. Now, one of the things that it's difficult to do is to gauge the effect in terms of direct response, because this isn't the kind of thing like a store putting out a coupon and then knowing how many coupons they distributed and then seeing how many are redeemed in the store. Instead, we are seeing that our standing in the community is rising. People just know that we're here, and that's one of the most important things that I think you can do with press releases, is simply have your church become top of mind in people's minds. So one of our goals, and one of the ways that we can't really measure it except anecdotally, is to have people come to think of our congregation when people ask them about churches, even if they aren't people who go to church. Our goal is that if someone moves into the area and their neighbor may not even be a churchgoer of any kind, but the person who's new is, and they turn to their neighbor and say, we are Christian, we are churchgoers, or we are interested in finding something like this, who's doing some good stuff in the area? We'd like to be known among everyone as the church that's doing some good stuff, and press releases help us build that image in the area.
It sounds awesome. It sounds like the press releases are having that kind of impact that you wanted to have. It is helping change the reputation of your church in the community. It is enhancing the knowledge of your church in the community. And you're right. It is kind of hard to measure that because you put out a press release for Saturday's paper, somebody came the next Sunday. And so really a person who or a church that wants to use press releases as part of the marketing strategy needs to have that kind of long-term reputation-building view and not just do one and hope that it makes all the difference in the world.
Absolutely. Your press release strategy is about the larger strategy of presenting the story of your church to the community, but one event at a time, as opposed to just saying, well, we're having a fish and chip sale this Saturday, and we'd like to publicize that into the community. Rather, you're thinking more in terms of what kind of image do you want to present to the community? What is it that you would love to have everyone around you know that you're doing and know that this is what you're about? And you can use press releases as a part of a larger strategy to accomplish that.
In your particular case, about how often are they coming out?
We definitely try to have one a month. So we are always looking to our calendar, and as we map things out, we're usually doing it with about a 3 or 4 month lead time. There's a small team of us that sits down and looks at what's coming up in the calendar, because there are different kinds of events that you would publicize in different ways. There are certain kinds of things where you're publicizing it in advance, and this may be something that you're inviting the public to come to, like a special concert or a special kids event. And then there are other things that you do as a church that really aren't designed for outsiders to participate in, like going on a mission trip or doing other kinds of good works in your area. But you do want the community to know that someone in the community is doing those things. And the community wants to know that people in their community are doing these things. And so as you map out your strategy, you're also looking at what events are we publicizing in advance, how far in advance, and then what events are going to be publicized after the fact. And then you massage that into a good, smooth calendar so that there's a steady flow of information going to the media outlets around you, but you're not inundating them.
Now, in terms of some of the events that have already occurred, you gave one example of a team going on a mission trip. What are some other things that your church has done event-wise that got turned into a press release?
Well, one that people really liked was our giveaway. The premise was really simple. A lot of churches, including our church, used to have a church fair where people would donate items, and then lots of people would laboriously price them, you know, 25 cents, 50 cents, or a dollar, whatever, you know how that works. And then people would come and buy those items, and you'd raise a few thousand dollars, and you'd give that money to charity. Now, what happened in our particular church was that we had learned of other churches that had done it in a different way, which was instead of selling these items, raising some money, and giving the proceeds to charity, what if you just gave the items away directly? And so we had a giveaway. We've done it a couple times now, where we have invited local social service agencies to send their clients so that the people are already vetted as clients, and they come, and they can just take whatever's there. And it's a great event. The idea that the church just gives the stuff away for nothing to people who are in need, because there are a lot of people in the area who've just, for example, made the transition from homelessness to Section 8 housing, but that subsidized apartment doesn't come with any furnishings or housewares. And so they come and they're able to take what they need, no limits, and it makes for a wonderful press release to talk about who was involved in setting it up, who was involved in organizing it, the agencies that were involved in sending clients. Obviously, you're never publicizing who the clients are for their privacy's sake, but just the photographs of the piles and piles and piles of things being organized for a free distribution makes for a good, heartwarming story.
And that particular type of event is not something you want to promote ahead of time, because really you're trying to not give away the farm, so to speak, but really give to a particular target audience. And so
exactly.
By announcing it afterwards, you kind of let that target audience develop itself, but then your press release is reporting just the real feel-good nature of what you're doing.
Right. And that's one of the things that I think people don't understand about the authorship of a press release, is that it really is supposed to look like a mini news story. It's written in the style of a story, of a news article, and the publications will often use it almost verbatim in that way. So you write it not from the perspective of us as a church, as the church, or as the subject saying something, but you write it from that third-party perspective about the event and send it on.
And use some of the quotes that people might, you may have heard say, or something along those lines, and it does sound like a field reporter has actually written it.
Yes. Yes. And so sometimes it may seem a little odd to be even the person writing it, and I may be writing it and say, and Reverend Hong, the pastor of the church, says, quote, whatever about the event. And it seems a little strange to compose something in that third-person style, and boy, it would sure sound awkward to say it to someone face-to-face, but that's how you write a press release.
Okay. And we'll get into some of the nuts and bolts in just a minute, but all right, so that's an example of an event that happened, and so a press release came out shortly thereafter. How about an event that's forthcoming? How can one use a press release to announce a particular event ahead of time?
Well, certainly any kind of significant event for the community is one that is suitable for a release, but you're always looking for why would the community be interested? They're not necessarily interested in helping you reach a particular goal. And so the highlight of the story has to be something that would interest them. And so you're thinking in terms of the readers of these publications. Why is it that they would really be interested in the event? Because they don't have the emotional investment in your congregation yet that you do. And so sometimes you think, oh, well, this is great because it helps us. But really the question has to become, why is it interesting to them? And so events that bring in maybe an artist, you know, a performer that they wouldn't ordinarily have a chance to see, events that raise money for charities that they may have a particular interest in would be good subjects for a press release. And you may then want to emphasize that performer or that charity more than you're emphasizing your church.
So in a sense, for the events that's forthcoming, the church is a character in the story versus the I don't know what the right word is, but I can imagine that the church is kind of a background character versus the actual event itself. And so I'm trying to think of maybe an example would be like at this time of year, like a back-to-school type event where the church is promoting some kind of back-to-school ministry or some kind of back-to-school event, and the central thrust of the story is not so much about everything that the church is doing to give away things, but much more in terms of the benefit that the community receives by coming to by being involved in such an event, or some of the expectations, or something along those lines, where the church is more of a background character rather than the actual.
Well, I think you're exactly right, because there are certain things that are so important for us as a church, and they're front and center, and yet it's not news. For example, I see press releases go out from churches that, wow, they're having Easter services. Okay. Right? I mean, sure, we all know Easter is the absolute highlight of our church calendar year, okay? We all know how central it is to what we believe, and we all know how important it is. We all know how festive it is. But a church having special Easter services is not news. That's all about the church. For the person who doesn't yet have a relationship with Jesus Christ, why is that important to them?
Mm-hmm.
Why would they be attracted to that? They will, hopefully. Hopefully someday they're going to learn the story and they're going to learn how important the resurrection is to them and their lives. But right now it isn't. And the idea of having a press release that says, you know, First Presbyterian Church celebrates Easter is kind of like saying McDonald's serves hamburgers. It's not news.
But if there was a special speaker coming to speak on a different theme or on a theme related to Easter or somebody from out of town or a visiting missionary or something, that may be newsworthy versus just a special service.
Exactly. Exactly. And so because that's you're giving them a particular opportunity that they don't know about.
And in seeing some of these press releases that you have seen, have you seen some other really awful examples to help us avoid? you mentioned one in terms of it's not news, but maybe there are a couple other things.
Well, I think you can have press releases that do use insider language that are just very, very much focused on things that only Christians who are deeply churched would understand or be interested in, and so you have to be careful about that sort of thing. You have to be just thinking in terms of the casual reader, right? What are they interested in? And so often churches have a very difficult time in their marketing putting themselves in the place of the unchurched person. I think that's just one of the core disconnects that we have, is we've been in the church for so long that we really haven't remembered what the unchurched person is interested in. And so we have all kinds of things that we talk about that benefit us but don't benefit the community, and so they're not interested.
I did come across a press release one time where it was full of insider language, and I've got a copy of it here on my website. The Presbyterians, referring to the individuals in the church versus the actual church itself, at the worship on Sunday in both sermon and song, the Presbyterians will focus on the ascension of our Lord 40 days after Easter. And then it goes on about the calling the thing the chap. They give like five different names for pastor, as chaplain and pastor and reverend, and it's like they're trying to get all the key words there. And so and so will deliver a homily, and the choir will sing a hymn written by a 700 AD British church historian. And the language of the press release was just so entirely flowery. You know, it was fluffy. It was just very hard to find out what they were actually announcing. So I think you've got a good point on that one, in terms of being careful not to use insider lingo. Now, let's before we get into the actual nuts and bolts of them, we've kind of talked about the events, using press releases for events that are coming and press releases for events that have already passed. Let's talk a few minutes here about distributing your press release. We'll get into composing it in just a minute, but let's just assume that we've got something composed and we want to get it out. Where does your church get them out? And then we'll talk about the mechanics of actually developing that network. But so where do you distribute your press releases?
Well, we distribute them, obviously, to all of the newspapers that are in the area. But one of the things that can happen in a community is that you can overlook the smaller outlets that are actually really, really good. The huge papers are not going to run your release. The New York Times is probably not going to run your release. The Chicago Tribune is probably not going to run your release. But even in a large urban area like that, there are still many, many publications, typically ones that are distributed for free, that are focused in on your particular geographic area. And those are the ones that you want to make sure that you include. They're the ones who are most likely to run your releases. They don't have large writing staffs, et cetera. And so they will often be looking for material that they can run. And the more you give it to them in a format that's just ready to go, the more likely it is that they'll use it. Another outlet that's really important to remember is small cable TV channels. Now, I don't know about every part of the United States, but certainly around here, each one of the cable networks cable companies operates a local news operation. In the New York area, it's a channel called New York One. And New York One is a small operation. When a reporter comes, it's one reporter carrying their own camera, and they set it up, and they edit the piece themselves, and it runs on New York One, a dedicated station to local news events. When you send them an interesting press release, something that sounds like it'll be photogenic, they show up. And one of the side benefits of it is that when they do a piece, it shows up on their website as a streaming video. And so I don't know how many people actually watch New York One, but we've had many, many stories about our church that we've linked to from our website to theirs. And those are pretty effective publicity pieces to have on your website because they have the credibility of being done by a news organization. So don't overlook radio or local radio or local television as outlets for your press releases in addition to the many community newspapers that are around you.
Now, in the community where I lived for many years, one of the community papers that they had was one. There's one for East Little County, and in that they had the so-and-so won the swimming awards, and so-and-so swim club beats such-and-such a swim club. But then also in that, there was a large classified section, and then there was a thing where there were these little community articles. And so this paper had a pretty wide circulation because everybody wanted to see their kids in print. That's another type of community newspaper. And another one that we saw was where it's probably three-quarters classified ads, where kind of yard sale announcements or I've got a bed for sale or I've got a house for sale, some of that type stuff. And they always had two or three community-oriented press releases built into their publication.
Yeah, those are fantastic kinds of outlets because, you know, the people who are in your area probably do pick them up and read them more often than you think.
Now, would you have any tips? Like, let's say that, you know, our church is in one county, but you've got a little paper the next county over. Are there any particular tips as to how to maybe tweak a press release when it's in a different county or even a different town for that matter?
Yeah, it's definitely something that you have to think about. One of the things that actually surprised us, one of those cases where you learn from the school of hard knocks, is we were trying to figure out why it was that a paper that was just a couple towns over from us, for those of you listening who aren't familiar with New Jersey, we're a state with many, many, many very small municipalities. It's one of the unique features of New Jersey. And we couldn't figure out why this newspaper, just two towns away, which really is only a couple miles, wouldn't run our release, rarely ran a release from us, even though we had many members who lived in that town. And what it turned out was in speaking to them, they just didn't realize that there was a connection. What they would see is First Presbyterian Church of Englewood, and they would say, "We're not Englewood." And so they were ignoring our releases. So one of the things that has helped is that we highlight the involvement of people in our events who are from that town. And so pictures are really good to include in your press releases. And when you do, and you include the caption, you know, how it always says left to right, so-and-so, 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 list what towns they're from, especially if they're from different towns, different areas. And it helps the release in general let people know that you do, as a church, draw from different communities, but it also gives the people in these different communities a reason to want to run your release. And so you can even tweak your release to the different publications to highlight that kind of thing. So, for instance, if the chairperson of an event happens to live in a particular town that isn't the town your church is located in, then in the release you send to the newspaper for that town, you want to say, and the chairperson of the event was John Doe of this other town. And that might not be what you would put in the release for your own local paper, which you might want to emphasize, you know, the connection to your own community. So you can tweak things like that in order to make the release be more suitable to the different publications that you're targeting.
Well, that's a great lesson from Hard Knocks, and so hopefully some of our folks will be able to apply that pretty well to their thing, to their area. Now we've covered a couple of different topics, but let's really now get into the actual nuts and bolts of composing a press release. We've talked a little bit about distribution and what type of events are good and tweaking it for different markets, but what's the nuts and bolts of an actual release? You probably have learned some things in the process, and so I'm thinking in terms of a press release I saw recently that had four different topics in it. And I'm sure that you've learned some things about keeping your press release focused.
Right. The most important thing is the headline. And so, and the headline obviously is going to be one item. Okay. So your press release is got to be focused on one item, and the one item should be able to have a catchy headline, because the first person whose interest you're trying to hook is that of the editor. And the editor, if the editor feels hooked, the editor will feel that the readers are going to get hooked, and so you need that headline that catches them, that makes them want to read a little more. For our giveaway, for instance, the headline was simply, First Presbyterian Gives Away Hundreds of Items. For, you know, after all, you know, who doesn't love free stuff? And so, you know, when that headline appeared, appeared in our press release, it subsequently appeared in the various papers, and we know people read those articles, and I think that it was pretty catchy to say, hey, what, somebody's giving something away? Let's read what that's about.
And I think you made a good point in the fact that your headline appeared practically verbatim, which is a point that you made earlier, is that the less work an editor has to do to fine-tune your stuff, the more likely you may actually get it published.
Yes.
But I think your point is right on, that your press release has got to narrow down to just one thing, one item. It's not about your fish fry and your upcoming back-to-school event and your upcoming Easter program, but one particular item.
If you do have all those things, you send three releases and let them pick. There's nothing wrong with putting three different press releases in one envelope, and different editors may decide that different things are important for their readership.
Okay. You started walking us through some of the components of a press release. So the first one that you've given us is a headline. What are some other things that are component-wise that are fantastic in a press release?
Well, typically you go directly from the headline into the story. And so you're writing the story as if you were a news reporter reporting on this. And whether it's a prospective or retrospective press release, you're still writing it in terms of a reporter saying, and, you know, this church is planning to do this, and you're giving them that information in two or three paragraphs. Typically not one big long paragraph, but several short ones, because if you look at a newspaper article, that's how they're written. You never have these newspaper articles that have super long paragraphs. Reporters aren't trained to write that way. And so you just give it two or three paragraphs that are directly about the item, that are brief paragraphs so that nothing is going on for too long, and then at the end you typically have what's called your boilerplate. Your boilerplate paragraph at the end of your press release is very consistent. That's why it's called boilerplate. You're putting it there about everything that you do. For example, we recently celebrated our 150th anniversary as a church, and what we decided to do was, rather than have that anniversary be a single event, we decided that it would cover the whole year's worth of events up to the culminating celebration. And so every press release ended with First Presbyterian Church currently celebrating its 150th year, etc. Okay. Was at the bottom of every press release, so that there was a consistent theme that people understood.
And then after the boilerplate, there are these little hashtag marks that I've been seeing, and I've seen press releases without them, and I've seen press releases with them. And what's the wisdom of having those hash marks or those pound signs at the bottom of your press release?
Yeah, it's really funny because a little mythology has developed around those. You know, I've heard people say, "Well, you need to put those little hashtags because everybody." You know, every editor looks at your press release, and if they don't see those, then they think that it's just done by an amateur. Well, that's true, but that's not the reason. The reason for those hashtags, three of them across the center, centered across the bottom of the press release, is that you have to give the editor the indication of when the press release actually ends, so that in other information that's provided is outside the press release. See, let me explain that a little better. What happens is that often when you have an event coming up, you put something in there like, for more information, call Chris Walker at such and such and such, or email address. Well, if that line occurs inside the press release, that is above the hashtags, then what you're telling them is that you're the person to contact for information about the event. But outside the hashtags, it's information for the directed at the editor, so the editor knows who to contact to get how to get more information. So you're telling the editor that if they would like to interview one of the principals, who do they call to set up an appointment? Who would they contact if they have a question about the press release itself? Because that's different contact information than what's contained within the release. So those hashtags tell the editor where the press release ends, because that's the information that's directed to the public, and where the information that's directed from the organization to the editor begins.
Now, one other thing that I've seen on most press releases is, even above the headline and the business contact information, there's for immediate release. Have you come across why that's on every single press release I've ever seen?
Yeah, the press release, the headline starts the release, and everything above it, the header, tells the editor when they can use it. And certainly for churches, you typically don't have what's called an embargo date. The embargo date or the embargo time is when the information in the release can be sent to the public. Because, for instance, if you're IBM and you're introducing a new line of computers, you're going to be sending press releases out to trade publications well in advance of the actual product launch. And those press releases will say for release on or after a particular date, which is the date that you are making the official product announcement. Now, very rarely is a church doing something that's a deep, dark secret that can't be announced until a particular date. And so almost always a church release is going to say for immediate release, which simply tells the editor they can go ahead and publish this information whenever they want to.
Now, at my website, or in fact anywhere all over the internet, you can find templates for press releases. But what we've done here is that we've outlined a couple of the basic elements. There's the for immediate release, the author, the business contact information in the header, and then the headline, the press release itself, the hashtags, and any particular information that the editor needs to know in terms of who to contact for extra information. And then we've also covered a little bit about some of the content and the perspective and avoiding Christianese and things along those lines. And so now we've kind of talked about composing it and the nuts and bolts of it. Let's really come back to the question of distribution. And you've already shared some of the ways that your church distributes the information, but let's get practical for those who've never done it before. And so what are some practical steps that a new person, a pastor or church secretary or a volunteer team, what are some actual steps that they can take in order to start developing press release distribution?
Well, one of the things that we always do is we ask people what they read. And we're not talking about whether you read Time or Newsweek. We sometimes have to give examples because often people don't mention the Penny Saver or something like that as a publication that they read. But we ask people what they read, and we do track that by which town they live in. And so whenever we have people coming to the church, particularly newer members, it's one of the conversation pieces that I use with new members. They come in and I just ask them, hey, by the way, you know, you're new to the church and so you managed to find us and we're always interested in how it is you get information about the community. So what do you read to find out about what's happening in your community? And we gather that information and we take note of somebody who mentions a publication that we may not have been aware of, and we take note of geographic trends in those publications because they often are very community specific, and so we know which publications people read who live to the west of us versus people who live to the south of us, and we know those things.
Once you identify the breadth of available sources, then what?
Well, as soon as you have the list of places list of publications, the thing that you do is you call them all. So you have to call each publication and you simply ask who handles press releases. Just say, I'm a church and we do community events and we would like to know where we should send that information. And then when they tell you, you need to try and talk to the person, cultivate a relationship with the person, and one of the core questions that you want to be asking them is, what's their publication cycle? What's their lead time? So, because you need to understand that, you know, they're in a routine, they have a publication, most of the publication cycle. Most of these community papers may be on a weekly cycle or a twice-a-week cycle, something like that. They generally aren't daily publications in smaller community target audiences. And so you need to find out what their lead time is so that if they receive a publication by such and such a date, when will it actually appear in the paper on average? And once you know that, then you know what they're looking for in terms of when they want to receive them. Because when you send something that seems to them to be too early or too late, it diminishes your chance of having the release run at all.
So, for example, one of my community papers, they publish every Thursday, but it was they had a week and a half lead time. So, if you wanted something before that Thursday edition, you had to back up about 10, 12 days in order to get it in there.
And so right.
That's kind of what you're getting at. Know what the lead time is of the various different papers that you want to distribute to.
Right. And you also actually try and time the release to get into the very beginning of that cycle. For example, if they published every Thursday, and let's say that the person's lead time is a week and a half, which means that it was the week before Monday that was the person's deadline for putting the information in, so it would run the following Thursday. Then if I want it to run the Thursday after that week, I'm trying to get that news release in their hands on Tuesday. Because on Tuesday, that editor is beginning work on a new issue because their deadline was Monday. And so I want it in their hands on Tuesday at the start of their work cycle, not Friday when they might have already received a number of equally worthy releases and feel they don't have room to put yours in.
And that also then gets into some of the scheduling things. So like if you're trying to issue a press release that's right after your event, you may actually be writing a press release before your event actually occurs to get it into the hopper.
Right. You have the nuts and bolts of it ready to go, and if you're just doing a photo or something like that, it goes right after. But you actually do have things prepared that you're having, you know, you're set on it running. You're set on what you're going to send. And so it's a little, if you want to maximize your effectiveness, you have to do more than just say, well, once a month we'll write a release, we'll stuff them in a bunch of envelopes and just send and label the envelopes and send them.
Or just a simple email, but it's some real intentional strategy that maybe your outreach teams have to consider if they want to use, they want to use press releases. Now, I think a lot of this information has been helpful, and because press releases is such a huge topic, there's plenty of information on the Internet to help other churches use it, but I think it's been helpful for you to be sharing with us your experiences using press releases, and particularly throughout your celebration this past year of of your 150th anniversary and all that kind of stuff. So I want to thank you for taking the time this afternoon to share those thoughts with us. And it's my hope and prayer that a lot of this information can help churches practically use this as part of their marketing strategy. So is there any other words of wisdom you want to throw out here at the last minute?
No, I just share your hope and I share your prayer in that regard, because I think churches do many more wonderful things than people realize. And so the press releases aren't really just about helping an individual church increase its attendance or increase its contributions. When you publicize the wonderful things that you're doing for the world, you're helping really the church at large, because you're helping change the image of what it is Christians do. And a lot of people just don't know that, and it's a story we aren't effective enough at telling.
All right, well, thanks for your time this afternoon. And this is Chris Walker with evangelismcoach.org, and here is another episode of the podcast. Now, if you want a future podcast, make sure you grab the feed, which is available at the website or even available through iTunes.
The preceding message was shared by Chris Walker, the main author behind evangelismcoach.org. For more materials on evangelism training and growing your church in the power of the Holy Spirit, or to request Chris to speak at your conference or event, visit the website at www.evangelismcoach.org.